Warning, when we put the explicit tag on this podcast, we weren't fucking around.
Today's episode of The Scathing Atheist is brought to you by the new line of forensic-friendly footwear for kitty-diddling clergy, Unmarked Vans. Is your brand-name priestly footwear getting you pinched by the SVU? Do you occasionally need to get out of the van and run? Do you really love Keds but wish they were more anonymous? Then we've got the shoe for you. Unmarked Vans, the number one choice for bipedophiles. And now, The Scathing Atheist.
One of the odd things about the push for same-sex marriage, it's largely an elite luxury good bought for on the backs of the poor.
My name is Elise from Seattle, Washington, and I got a B+ in my theology class that I should have aced, all because my professor could not convince me that we did not evolve from filthy monkey men. Which we did. Evolve from filthy monkey men.
It's April 3rd.
And yogurt companies still can't get rid of that jizz puddle on top.
What the fuck is up with that? I've no illusions.
I'm Heath Enright. And from cold-hearted New York, New York.
And uncharted Podunk, Georgia, this is The Scathing Atheist.
In this week's episode, studies show you don't have the right to your wrong opinion.
We'll declare South Carolina State Senator Kevin Bryant this show's official fossil.
And Eli Bosnick will join us to review God's Not Dead.
But first, the diatribe. Love me some Neil deGrasse Tyson. That dude is awesome. When he talks about the universe, it makes me want to grab my telescope. When he talks about evolution, it makes me want to think a bacterium. And when he talks about atheism, it makes me want to microwave my dick. Now, this is a really hard diatribe for me because I'm going to be bitching about somebody that I really admire. And odds are he's somebody that you really admire, too. How could you not? He's brilliant, funny, engaging, witty. He's done more to inspire reverence for science than I could do if he gave me 6 lifetimes, and he pulls off that sexy-ass mustache like nobody's business. Now, if you've never heard him directly confront the atheism question, you're probably wondering how the hell I could possibly have an issue with Neil deGrasse Tyson. He's one of the most effective voices in the country fighting against the encroachment of creationism into our schools. His entire life is dedicated to spreading critical thinking, and he hasn't passed up on a single chance to bitch-slap young earthers in this new Cosmos series, either. So in light of all that positive shit that he's done, my complaint might seem like a nitpick, but I also think it's an important one. So Neil, if you're listening to this, and let's face it, you're not, just admit it, dude, you're an atheist. The religious folks already hate you regardless, so you might as well join our club, we'd be happy to take you. Now for the record, I should note that if you ask Dr. Tyson, he will tell you that he is not an atheist. But if you ask a dictionary, it'll tell you that he is. To be fair to Neil, I understand completely, and I also concede that he's way smarter than me, so there's a good chance that I just have my head up my ass on this one. And when he explains why, it's damn convincing. You know, why claim to have some kind of knowledge that he can't really have? Why claim to know something that can't be known? I'm sure that Neil deGrasse Tyson is well aware that atheists don't claim to have knowledge of God's non-existence, whatever the hell that would mean. I'm sure he understands completely that the dividing line between a theist and an atheist is a matter of belief, not certainty, and I imagine he knows good and damn well that any reasonable definition of atheism includes him, but instead of embracing it, he's bowing to the social pressure that says saying you're an atheist is mean to religious people. So sure, this is a semantic issue, but that doesn't mean it's unimportant, and not just in terms of atheism here. The very concept of the null hypothesis is at stake here. When well-known popularizers of science carve out this special exemption for theism, they're muddying the waters of what it means to think scientifically, to think critically. You think Tyson would go out of his way to admit that he doesn't have any special knowledge that Bigfoot doesn't exist, or that my Aunt Martha wasn't abducted by aliens? Of course not. He would apply the null hypothesis. The popular concept of what an atheist is will ultimately be determined by who chooses to wear the label. When Tyson backs away from it, he's reinforcing the notion that to call oneself an atheist is to declare war on religion. And for all the listeners out there that are just like mentally defending Tyson by saying he's just trying to be the most effective communicator of science that he can be, I want you to consider this. Every time Tyson is asked if he's an atheist, which happens quite often, he's passing up on an opportunity to explain the scientific method. He could very easily reply with a succinct explanation of Occam's razor along with a quick explanation of what atheism really means. But instead, he knowingly redefines atheism in an effort to exclude himself. And I just don't see how you can say that confusing the definition of a word makes one a more effective communicator.
They're talking about your Jesus.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a special news bulletin.
Joining me for headlines tonight is Master Masturbator Bader Heath Enright. Heath, are you ready to put some porn on a string?
It's easier than tying the flies.
You know, this kind of reminds me of the first day we met.
Fateful day, not going to tell the story. In our lead story tonight, that's something else. From the massive Christian tax embezzlement file, Carroll County, Maryland Commissioner Robin Frazier opened up another government meeting with an illegal prayer. Uh-huh. And because being righteous involves constant bouts of verbal diarrhea, apparently, she can't freely practice Christianity without regularly forcing everyone else at work to waste time and tax dollars listening to her talk about Jesus.
But at least she was ecumenical, right? She gave a nice, measured, inclusive, non-judgmental speech with it and stuff, right?
Of course she did. Here's an actual statement from Frazier from last week's meeting. Quote, "If we cease to believe that our rights come from God, we cease to be America. We've been told to be careful, but we're going to be careful all the way to communism." So,
well, that's not hyperbolic.
No, actual quote. She's obviously got a lot of brain confusion going on, but somehow she knows about our plan to replace capitalism with atheism, because that makes perfect sense.
Pounding a nail right through the invisible palm of the market. Yes, sir.
Nice. Well, Adam and Eve Smith reference, highbrow again. Despite warnings of civil action by the American Humanist Association, they did the same thing again this week and can now face penalties of approximately $10,000 per prayer. Seems like a fine that small should be nothing to Christians, considering they could just, I don't know, pray for $11,000 or something even bigger, like eternal bliss. I don't know what they pray for, whatever.
You know.
But this should give us a nice quantifiable look at the real-life Pascal's wagering behavior among purported, quote, true believers. So we'll see how they actually play their
could
cards and money.
And in Pleistocene morality news tonight, two Christian tit nibblers in South Carolina have used actual taxpayer-funded time to shit all over a little girl's attempt to make the woolly mammoth her state's official fossil. The story begins when young Olivia McConnell wrote to her state representative to point out that her state doesn't have an official fossil, and if they didn't act quickly to appoint the woolly mammoth, they might end up with something shitty like Maryland's fossilized snail or Maine's petrified wood.
Are these guys suggesting the Savior's fossilized foreskin instead? I mean, that's pretty close to petrified wood. It's adjacent.
Yeah, yeah.
And who doesn't once in a while refer to their junk as the woolly mammoth? So let's be fair.
Yeah, that's cross-gender, too.
Yeah,
now, that what should have been a cute and perfunctory educational experience that little Olivia could brag to her grandchildren about instead turned into a proxy war over creationism when state senator and Nickelodeon villain Kevin Bryant proposed an amendment that would insert a passage of Genesis into the bill just so nobody forgets who fashioned those fossils and those fjords.
Which passage of Genesis was that? The part when God buried a bunch of fake animal remains that reconcile everything right before he created Satan and archaeology? It was that part? Because it was redacted in my King James version. It was
I believe it's in the Book of Prefect. Proving once again that there's nothing too insignificant or petty for creationists, Brian and his henchman, Senator Mike Fair, spent about a week blocking this symbolic gesture in hopes of getting somebody to agree that Jesus...
And in double standardized testing news, fact denier schools in the UK were recently caught censoring out items from a nationally required science exam because questions about things that happened before the fake universe began are impossible to answer, I guess.
Right, right,
not
yeah.
Fair.
Excuse me, Sister Mary Bum Puncher, which of the ovals stands for were you there?
No, if it were just a few priests and rabbis, you know, blacking out evolution questions, having the kids skip those, that would be stupid, but still representative of the knowledge being tested here. Instead, these schools colluded with the exam agencies, which I would imagine means that being ignorant of basic science wouldn't count against you as long as your school administrators are followers of a crazy old desert people. So if you can't or won't learn science, then you should score badly on standardized science tests. That's
right?
What that's for.
Yeah, like civil disobedience would have been a hell of a lot less impressive if Thoreau was on the lam when he wrote it. Defeats the purpose, guys. Gotta take your
lumps. Wow.
Thanks.
Academic. Just gonna climb down from that ivory tower and move on. And in preemptive dyke news, 8-year-old Virginia girl Sunny Kale was pressured to end her enrollment at Timberlake Christian School for being too boyish, and therefore, I guess, prepubescently homosexual, according to Christianity.
What the hell does that even mean? Does she say, ew girls instead of ew boys? She's fucking
<It doesn't>
eight!
Now, unfortunately for the precocious carpentress, 8-year-old alleged homosexuals in Virginia are very similar to convicted felons, so her options going forward are pretty limited. However, 18-year-old alleged homosexuals are actually at quite an advantage when applying to colleges, so let's give her some, you know, themed ideas. 30 seconds on the clock. LGBT schools of higher education, go.
Oh, awesome. This won't offend anyone.
No, of course not.
How about Pepperdike University?
Right. Double Oral Roberts. It's at least a little bit gay. Two dicks, one mouth. Slightly
gay
at the very least.
I guess Gaylor is too easy, so Clam Slamhurst.
What about Hey Baylor? Something like that. She-Manhattan College? She-Manhattan College?
MIT Baggers?
Brown Eye University? Part of the H Ivy League.
Oh, God.
That's not offensive.
I guess Cornhole up in Ithaca, that's H Ivy League too, isn't it?
Known for going corn elbow deep, indeed. All right, maybe something right there in Virginia. What about William and Ferry?
Nice. I was going to say William and Marty, but, you know, either or.
Sounds like one of those charter schools. What about Civil Union Theological Seminary right here in New York?
Or the University of Notre Dame's?
Yeah, home of the sword-fighting Irish. What about the university formerly known as Princeton?
Well done, sir. Well done. I guess there's already a Queen's University in Canada, but I think it still counts for our purposes here if I say that it's in Strap, Ontario, right?
Nice. Ass-to-ass jokes always. Well, you didn't overtly make an ass-to-ass joke, but
no,
that's
not
where.
No, really, but you could take it that way, I guess. I wouldn't take it that way, but you could take it that way. And before we close the headlines out tonight, I want to make the most awkward transition ever to take place and take a rare serious moment to recognize a powerful force in the atheist movement who we lost last week. Edwin Kagan spent almost a decade as the legal director for American Atheists and played a vital role in the World Trade Center Cross lawsuit, the atheist bench in Florida, the Kentucky Homeland Security lawsuit, and countless others.
But even long before that, he made a name for himself as a powerful legal force for free thought and civil liberties. He was an author, a sought-after secular speaker, and a funny motherfucker, as evidenced by his proclivity for de-baptizing atheists with a hairdryer.
Nice. Now, perhaps the most important piece of his legacy is Camp Quest, the nation's first strictly secular summer camp, which he co-founded with his late wife in 1996. This program has grown to include more than a dozen sites and serves hundreds of kids every summer. He was a dedicated, passionate, and invaluable member of the humanist movement, and he will be missed.
If you'd like to support his legacy, we'll be including a link to donate to Camp Quest on the show notes for this episode.
And on that unusually somber note, we'll close out the headlines for the night. Heath, thanks as always.
Sayonara, bitches.
You're not supposed to make me laugh at this point. And when we come back, Eli Bosnick will join us to beat God's Not Dead to death. King Xerxes was a child molester. And if you don't believe me, just ask Esther. She was virginal at age 15 until that pervert made her queen. He fucked her young and fucked her often, and when his royal dick would soften, he'd send her out to live her life and maybe fuck a different wife. Now, Esther might have been a temptress, but she was better than the prior empress, who King Xerxes deemed a twat for expressing independent thought. So when he finished with his Vashti purging, he sent a group to bring back virgins. They bathed and dressed and spent a year doing makeup in their hair, and then he boned them one by one, taking notes each time he'd come, and when all the virgins took the test, it turned out Esther was the best. Now, historically, it's not reliable, like many stories in the Bible. It's another contradictory instance. Come on, a great fuck and a Jewish princess? But irrespective, I digress. There's two more people to address. First, Haman, who's a nasty brute that hates the Jews who won't salute, so in a crowd, Haman walks by and each one bows but Mordecai. So Haman says, I've lost my patience, I'm with the king, now give obeisance. But flatly Mordecai refused, so Haman walks off, his ego bruised. He tells the king, my lord, I do wish I could murder everyone who's Jewish. So the king considers Haman's plot and says, a holocaust? Yeah, sure, why not? So quickly Xerxes pens a letter that makes the plot a public record. Of course, the king was unaware that his lovely queen, so sweet and fair, was actually a Jew, then add that Mordecai is pretty much her dad. What's more, before the Haman thing, he'd stopped a
coup against the king, so Haman thinks the Jews are goner instead of parades held in his honor. He then sees his adoptive daughter, says, have you heard about this pending slaughter? So if you see the king and get a chance, think maybe you could change his stance. So she invites her hubby and Haman to a lovely banquet, whereupon she says, hey, those Jews you wanted dead? You mind murdering Haman instead? And the king says, sure, that's all you want. Kill my trusted commandant. She says, well, those Jewish killers you've amassed, could you kill them too and do it fast? So he grants her wish and many die. Then the king promotes old Mordecai, and the three of them have joy and laughter while the rest die happily ever after. From a brief glance at the marquee, it would seem that the film industry has finally learned something that the music industry learned long ago. It's easier to make something Christian than to make something good. Recent releases like Noah and Son of God are clear indicators that Hollywood's jumping on the Jesus bandwagon, and the box office returns would suggest that they're happy they did. Possibly the most egregious of these releases, God's Not Dead, brings us a cast that makes Kevin Sorbo look like a celebrity and a script that makes Ray Comfort seem convincing. To talk us through this testament to credulity is friend of the show Eli Bosnick. Eli, welcome back.
I have to say, like, we get along, but I'm starting to hate you. It's like the read the Bible and then go see God's Not Dead. The least pleasant experiences of my life have been due to coming on this show.
All right. So let's get right to it. On a scale of 1 to 5 festering piles of armadillo shit, what do you give this movie?
It's so bad good. From literally the very first moment to the movie, you cannot miss this movie. You have to see it.
See, now, I have a feeling a lot of our listeners are going to avoid this thing like they would traumatic brain injury. So for those of them who don't take your advice, could you sum up the plot for us? What's going on in this flick?
So the main plot line is there's this Christian kid, and he signs up for this philosophy class, and it's this professor who's an atheist. And the professor, the first day, for those of you who haven't seen the trailer, first day is like, hey, God's dead. Write it on a piece of paper because I don't want to bother with it. And the kid just like sad face. Like he can't, he's literally like, it's like the scene from Liar Liar where Jim Carrey's trying to write the pen is blue. He's like, I can't do it. No. So finally Kevin Sorbo comes up. He's like, what's the problem? And the kid's like, I can't do this. I'm a Christian. And then he turns evil. So he's like, well, I challenge you to a debate. So he gives the kids 20 minutes in 3 classes to defend that God is not dead.
Hence the title.
There's 2 other main characters. There's a Muslim girl who has secretly become Christian. There's an atheist reporter who works for a newspaper called The New Left. And her plot is just a mess. And then there's a preacher from the local town and an African missionary, and they're trying to get to Disneyland, but their car keeps breaking down. They go through 3 cars. And they all break down. And you know how they get it to start at the end of the movie?
They pray, don't they?
They pray at the star car starts.
Oh, Jesus.
They pray a car started. This movie, all right, this is the most racist movie I've seen since Birth of a Nation. This movie is insane. There's a Chinese kid in this movie who is just, I mean, he's everything except like Breakfast at Tiffany's. The Muslims in this movie, so the Muslim girl and her dad, they're like the Jews from Passion of the Christ. They could not look more Muslim-y and like hissing like. The African guy is the most racist character of someone in Africa you've ever seen. He literally talks like this throughout the entire movie and he is always smiling. So it's the first day of class. Oh, wait, first, there's a lady with Alzheimer's. This was someone's grandmother that was like, I want to be in the movie. So, we cut to the first debate, and the kid presents a cosmological argument, right? Mm-hmm. Here's the amazing thing. They present all the good atheism arguments, and then they just ignore them. So a student in the class raises her hand, and she's like, hey, according to Richard Dawkins, in The God Delusion, when you say that God created the universe because all things have a cause, I ask who created God. And the kid goes, good question. Well, I would return the question to Richard Dawkins. If the universe created you, who created the universe? And everyone's like, oh. And I'm like, no, what the fuck does that mean?
Let's just back up to before you ask that question.
Right. He's like, you can't talk on a, so it's a ta-ta. And Kevin Sorbo's character again goes, look, here's Stephen Hawking's thing about the law of gravity. The nature of existence is to exist, not to not exist. This is what Stephen Hawking says. Do you think you're smarter than Stephen Hawking? And there's this amazing moment where the kid doesn't know what to say. He's just like, and then they leave. So we cut to the next class, and the kid goes, hey, last class, the professor mentioned that Stephen Hawking said that the universe must have a cause. But did you know that Professor John Lennox says blah, 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 blah? He fucking quotes John Lennox. It's basically like saying, oh, Stephen Hawking says that this must be true, but Ray Comfort, but Dr. Ken Ham says blah.
Doctor. So
John Lennox knows as much about the universe as Annie Lennox, but it's like it blows Kevin Sorbo's mind. He does this. He goes, Stephen Hawking says the universe wasn't created. Nuh-uh. And everyone in the class is like, oh,
I never thought about it like that before.
Rah, 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 rah. So after the class, they all leave, and the professor comes up, and again, Kevin Sorbo, doing a good job, comes up, and he's like, Professor, can I ask you, why are you an atheist? And he gives this great monologue. He's like, when I was 12, I watched my mother die of cancer, and I begged God to save her. Mm-hmm. And you're like, wow, okay, problem of evil. It's a really good and concise, I mean, it's a little emotional, but it's a really good and concise problem of evil.
Right, but it also sets up that standard that all atheists were spurned by God to
right,
become
of course.
Atheists.
All the atheists in this movie really don't, they all believe in God, they just hate him.
Uh-huh.
It's not that we don't believe, we just hate him. Anyways, we cut over to liberal McNewleft girl. She finds out she's got cancer. Then we got our wacky preacher and his wacky friend. They can't get the car to work. Doesn't make a lot of sense. Nothing really happening. We cut to the final class. And the kid's like, the problem of evil. Why God do things, blah, blah, blah. Do you know what the answer is?
Because the evil stuff is good for us.
No. It's not good for us. It's free will.
So he wanted Kevin Sorbo to have the free will to watch his mom die of cancer, or
that's
he wanted
it.
Mom to have the free will to have cancer?
Yep, free will to cancer. They have this confrontation moment where he goes, why do you hate God? And he's like, I don't hate God. God's not real. And he's like, why do you hate God? And he's like, I don't hate God. God's not real. And he's like, why do you hate God? Like, I do hate God. I hate God. I have nothing but hate for God. And he runs out of the room, and the kids are all like, they have a Dead Poets Society moment where they're like, God's not dead. They take a vote, and he's like, God's not dead. And then they stand up one by one, and they're all like, God's not. And they cheer, and the kid's like, yeah! And he jumps up in the air, and it fucking freeze frames a piece of shit. Horribleness. They're all convinced that God's not dead, and the professor, like, runs out of the room crying. It's just the stupidest fucking shit. So then, here's the part of the movie that's just here where it goes from absolutely, it's like, yeah, shitty apologetics to bonkers town. Kevin Sorbo's walking through the rain, and he gets hit by a car. And the Christian minister and the African friend see it. So they run out of the car, and he's like, the Christian minister bends down, and he's like, hey man, are you okay? The African guy literally just like touches him, and he goes, oh no, he is going to die. His lungs are filling with blood. He's like, how do you know that? You're a minister. So he sits there, and he's like, do you take God as your savior? And he's like, I'm an atheist. I'm scared. And he's like, you must accept God as your savior. He's there for you. And he's like, I believe. And then Kevin Sorbo dies. Immediately after watching someone get struck by a car and die, the African guy stands up and goes, I quote, today is a good day. Today is a good day. For although there is a moment of suffering in this world, imagine this celebration that goes on in heaven. Not his first reaction isn't like, oh, we should probably call 911. His first reaction is, awesome. Today is a good day.
Okay, so here's my big question. This movie has, like I said, less than one star on Rotten Tomatoes, but it's killing at the box office. The Christians are going to see it. So, like, is this, in your mind, going to, like, just open up the door to why ever bother to make a good movie again if the Christians will go see this shit?
I think what you're missing, Noah, and this is really important, this movie is amazing for atheism. And here's why. Because what it teaches is that kids all over the country, like in Portland State University, are going to stand up and challenge Peter Boghossian to a debate. And they're going to get fucking corrupt. You know that's going to happen. You know that some poor kid is going to see this movie. He's going to take his Bogosian's critical thinking class, and it's going to be like a flash cut. The kid's going to be sitting at home on his bed being like, I didn't even think about any of this stuff. The movie said that he'd be really surprised. Teacher's going to be like, yeah, well, fossil record. And the kid's going to be like, I didn't know what that means. But the Nietzsche quote, have you read Nietzsche? No, I saw a movie. John Lennox? Who the fuck is John Lennox? I don't know. It's all so scary and real. But this is why this movie. So atheists and Noah, don't despair. I know the thought immediately is this is number 5 at the box office. It's taken in $75 million as of me Googling it this morning. You know, oh no, we're all lost. No, 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 no. I want God's Not Dead 2. I want God's Not Dead 2, where this kid goes to a class with a competent professor, just someone who's ever heard of those arguments, and he's like, I'm sorry, I'm a Christian. And the professor's like, that's totally fine. Anyways, chapter 1. And the kid's like, I challenge you to a debate. No. Stop interrupting me. Not allowed to just talk in my class. Because the more people see God's Not Dead, the more people you're going to convert. Because they're going to come to you with these arguments, and you're just going to crush them.
Right on.
Crush them like bugs.
I really appreciate you suffering through that film so that a lot of us wouldn't have to.
Oh my God, I hate you all. I hate you all so much.
Awesome, man. Well, thanks again for joining us.
All right. Thanks again.
Before we drain the bottle tonight, I wanted to let everybody know that there's way more of the interview I did with Eli than what you just heard. Our Patreon patrons will have heard about 50% more than everybody else, but even then, there's another like 12 minutes of the interview I didn't have room for. So if you want to hear the whole 26-minute interview, check it out on the extras page on our website. That's free for everybody, patron or no. That's all we've got for you tonight, but if you want more, there's more. Thomas invited me on his new show, Atheistically Speaking, the other night to discuss the Hobby Lobby case, really interesting subject, and we got pretty deep into it, so I'd recommend that. I'll also be on the upcoming episode of The Imaginary Friend Show, plugging the hell out of the new book this week, so be sure to look for that coming up. Speaking of plugging the hell out of the new book, it's available as an ebook at the Kindle store. If you use a different ebook service, let me know. I'll see what we can do about getting it listed there as well. And if you're holding out for the paperback, you shouldn't have to wait long, hoping to have those available to order in the next couple of weeks, beginning of May at the latest. You'll find links to the book, as well as Atheistically Speaking and The Imaginary Friend Show, on the show notes for this episode. A lot of thanks to squeeze into this outro, so I'm going to have to go super quick. I want to thank Elise for providing this week's Farnsworth quote, and on her behalf, I want to say, fuck that evolution denialist professor. I need to thank Heath because he's awesome. I need to thank Lucinda because she's also awesome. But most of all, I need to thank this week's most awesome people, and holy shit is this week filled with most awesome people. So here it is, all in one breath. Joe, Conrad, Richard, Terry, Tommy, Paul, Michelle, Elena, David, Dana, Benjamin, Neil, Scott, Shane, Brian, Lauren, William, Brock, Other, David, Kevin, Jordan, Robin, John, Danny, Ivy, Paul, Jeff, Stephen with a PJ, Michael, Glenn, B, Chris, Drew, Sean, Debbie, Howard, Sabrina, Mike, Susan, Zach, Matt, Tom, Damian, Sakura, Other, David, Tyler, Tim, Mary, Stephen with a V, Soren, Alan, PK, Joe, D, Brandon, Kevin, Christopher, Brian, Joel, Thomas, James, Other, Michael, Vinny, Dave, and Matthew. Joe, Conrad, Richard, Terry, Tommy, Paul, Michelle, Elena, David, Dana, and Benjamin, whose neuronal activity could jumpstart a flux capacitor. Neil, Scott, Shane, Brian, Lauren, William, Brooke, Other, David, Kevin, Jordan, and Robin, whose IQs are so high most people assume they're being expressed in binary. John, Danny, Ivy, Paul, Jeff, Stephen with a PJ, Michael, Glenn, B, and Chris, who are so sexy they make Diogo Morgado look like a crucified Jew. Drew, Sean, Debbie, Howard, Sabrina, Mike, Susan, Zach, Matt, Tom, and Damian, who make Captain America seem like a pansy for needing a shield. Sakura, Other, David, Tyler, Tim, Mary, Stephen with a V, Brandon, Alan, PK, Soren, and D, whose adventures are so epic that even Peter Jackson couldn't make them boring, and Joe, Kelvin, Christopher, Brian, Joel, Thomas, James, Other, Michael, Vinny, Dave, and Matthew, whose cock rings are mostly comprised of icy bodies and small meteors. These 66 brave and nope, holy shit, 66? Really? Holy fuck, you guys are awesome. Seriously. Anyway, these 66 noble and valiant listeners have proved themselves paragons of humanity this week by giving us money, many of them by signing up for the recurring payments through our new, easy-to-use, bonus-content-laden Patreon page at patreon.com/scathingatheist. Others by clicking on the donate button on the right side of our homepage. And I don't really have time to remind you to give us a glowing review on iTunes or check us out on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube because I had too many people to thank. So if you have questions, comments, or death threats, you'll find all the contact info on the contact page at scathingatheist.com. All the music used in this episode was written and performed by yours truly, and yes, I did have my permission. Thank you. God's not. God's also not bread.
He's also not bread, guys. No. Super important.
I don't think they have to make a movie for that anyway. So, in editing, this will sound great.